The Minnesota House of Representatives Committee on Public Safety and Criminal Justice Reform will come to order. The clerk will take the roll.
Chair Mariani.
Present.
Vice Chair Frazier.
Present.
Representative Johnson.
Present.
Representative Edelson.
Present.
Representative Feist.
Present.
Representative Grossel.
Present.
Representative Hollins.
Present.
Representative Hewlett.
Present.
Representative Cleavorn. Representative Cleavorn. Representative Long.
Present.
Representative Lucero. Representative Lucero. Representative Mueller.
Present.
Representative Novotny.
Present.
Representative O'Neill.
Present.
Representative Pinto. Representative Pinto. Representative Poston.
Present.
Representative Raleigh.
Present.
Representative Vang.
Present.
Representative Zhang. Representative Zhang. Representative Cleavorn.
Present. And I just want you to know I had a little trouble getting in, and I understand that Representative Pinto is also trying to. Thank you.
Representative Lucero. Representative Pinto. Representative Zhang. That concludes roll call with 16 present.
Mr. Chair, you're on mute.
Oh, my goodness. Let me start over. Thank you, Representative Long. Members, I do know that some folks are still trying, members rather, are still trying to get in. So whoever is in control letting people in, if they could work on that. And then if Ms. Booth allowed me, can just keep an eye out, then we'll mark those individuals present. Members, there is a quorum. The hearing is being conducted remotely on an electronic platform pursuant to Minnesota House Rule 10.01, Emergency House Operations, in response to the COVID-19 infectious disease pandemic requiring public health exercise with social distancing. Members of the public can come to the Minnesota House webpage or website to view House Rule 10.01, but also to visit this committee page to view how to access this hearing via streaming video, as well as instructions on how to participate in public testimony. Members, I do believe we have minutes from both April 7th and April 8th, and so I would entertain a motion to adopt those minutes.
So moved, Chair.
Very well. Thank you. Representative Frazier moves adoption of the minutes of April 7th and April 8th. Discussion. All in favor of that motion, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed, same sign. Motion prevails. And the minutes of April 7th and April 8th are hereby adopted. Members, we have two bills up before us today. House file 600. We will be taking formal action on both of these bills today. So the first bill up is House File 600, and our second bill is House File 2359. I will try to be as expeditious as I can with the clock, given that we start at, 50 minutes later. I'll stay in touch with our staff to see how that fits into the ability of our house IT folks, communication folks, to keep us online. So with that, members, I'm going to call forward House File 600. The chair moves to refer House File 600 to the Committee on Health and Finance Policy. Representative Winkler, welcome to the committee.
Chair Mariani?
Yes, Representative Johnson.
I just have a little bit of question. I just, our side of the aisle is curious. We're pushing up to 3 weeks past deadline. Today we're hearing bills. This particular bill at 600 still has a number of stops to make. It's going nowhere in the Senate is what we've heard. I'm just wondering why we're continuing to have hearings past deadline, and the fact that we can still bring these up next session and continue on the process instead of doing this now. And also on the next bill we're hearing, trying to remember, I think it wasn't entered till after deadline. So I'm just wondering, give a good explanation why we're hearing these bills well after deadline.
Representative Johnson, the question is appropriate. There's perhaps two reasons, one for each bill. The second bill, House File 2539, involves language that, frankly, the chair wants to see available in our conversation with the other body as we negotiate the omnibus public safety judiciary bill. The first bill is a pretty salient bill that's been around the concept for a couple of years. We've taken action on it before. It's a topic that, quite frankly, broad array of Minnesotans want this legislature to engage in one manner or the other. As you know, and as all members know, our Rules Committee can always take action to be able to formally put bills before us before we adjourn. There's no legislation that ends automatically prior to that date. And, of course, we have CITES next year. So it's always an appropriate time to be able to hear bills, to at least air them out, and in rare cases, to be able to formally move them beyond the posted deadline dates. And we have a process in the committee that can facilitate me to make that happen. With that, members, I'm going to ask Representative Winkler to come forward. Representative Winkler, House File 600 is before us, and I believe you have an author's amendment. Do you wish the chair to move that at this point?
Yes, Mr. Chair, if you would, I guess, move the bill and the author's amendment, I would appreciate it.
Very well. The bill has been moved. The chair moves the adoption of the A25 author's amendment, puts the bill in the shape that the author wishes it to be before us today. Discussion. All in favor of that motion, please say aye.
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 Opposed, same side.
No.
Nope.
Motion prevails. And the House File 600 is so amended with the 825 amendment. Representative Winkler.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. In light of time, testifiers and the typical desire to ask questions that I've seen with this bill, I'll try to be very much on point to the public safety elements of this bill. In sum, our effort as a society and as a state to use the criminal justice system to ban, prohibit, and criminalize cannabis is a public policy failure. Cannabis is widely used in Minnesota. It is widely used and available by youth in Minnesota. It is becoming legal in the states around us. And roughly two-thirds of Americans and Minnesotans think that it is possible to use cannabis safely and to use it for their health and to use it for their own recreational purposes. As a public safety and criminal justice matter, cannabis prohibition has had a disproportionate effect on communities of color, especially Black Minnesotans. While Black Minnesotans and white Minnesotans use cannabis at almost exactly the same rate. Anywhere, a black Minnesotan is anywhere from 4 to 10 times more likely to be arrested and charged for a cannabis-related crime. Over-policing, focusing on using cannabis as a pretext for search and for essentially criminalizing behavior is part of a failed approach to cannabis. House File 600 seeks to legalize cannabis, create a regulated marketplace in which we can address the actual harms caused by cannabis, which are some, but not many, where we can make sure that the harm caused by our war on drugs is corrected and rectified and repaired in some way by creating marketplace opportunities for the people and communities most adversely affected, providing grant funding, capital, making sure that we have navigators ready to help move people through, make sure that we have workplaces that have union representation so that wages and hours are good, making sure that we have a system for small, micro, and craft-sized businesses in Minnesota to get started first before we allow in major companies into the marketplace so that people without high amounts of capital are able to be part of the upside of the cannabis marketplace. At its root, our policy is a failure, and it creates harm. This bill is about correcting that harm of cannabis prohibition using the criminal justice system, and I ask for your support today.
Very well, thank you, Representative Winkler. I see you have two testifiers, and then there are also public testifiers that wish to come forward. So at this point, I'm going to ask Julia Decker from the ACLU to come forward, identify yourself for the record, and give us your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Good afternoon, Mr. Chair and members. Julia Decker, Policy Director for the ACLU of Minnesota. We're very grateful to Majority Leader Winkler for bringing HF 600 forward, and the ACLU of Minnesota, as part of the Minnesotans for Responsible Marijuana Regulation Coalition, support this important move to address a major driver of racial disparities and mass incarceration in Minnesota. As you heard from the Majority Leader, marijuana usage rates for Black and white Americans are similar, both nationwide and in Minnesota, yet arrest rates for marijuana possession reflect really deep racial disparities. Nationally, a Black person is on average 3.6 times more likely to be arrested for marijuana possession than a white person. And as you heard, in Minnesota, our rate is much higher. Even minimal contact with the criminal legal system can have far-reaching consequences. And these consequences historically have been disproportionately levied against BIPOC and low-income communities. Marijuana criminalization in particular has been a key driver of racial disparities and mass incarceration. So now more than ever, it is time for the legislature to recognize the disparate harms this criminalization has inflicted and take a genuinely meaningful step towards creating a more equitable legal system by passing HF 600. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Decker. And hopefully you can stick around for any questions. Very well. Next we have, and I apologize if I mispronounce your name, Kente Shivers. If you can come forward, identify yourself for the record and give us your testimony, we'd appreciate it.
Hi, my name is Isaiah Shivers. I want to thank the chair and Public Safety Committee for hearing me out today. Basically, I want to speak to you guys about my experience with cannabis as a cannabis user and how I suffered from cannabis possession charges here in Minnesota and incarceration time. I actually moved from West Memphis, Arkansas to Minnesota, came here for college, and ended up with possession charges that gave me 36 months in prison. That was also combined with a child endangerment charge, even though the marijuana wasn't anywhere near the children in their possession or anything like that for them to get to. I was put in prison with a lot of obviously violent criminals from rapists, and I was a first-time offender. Prison affected my employment. Obviously, once I got released, home, trying to find homes, basically affected my whole lifestyle, lost contact with children and family as well. Basically, why I want legalization here in Minnesota, because of obviously the racial relations that has a big disparity. Legalization could also, you know, help the economy and offer jobs and opportunities to people in need. We need safety regulations because with black markets, you got a lot of bad cannabis out there, bad K2 and different harmful products that can hurt and put people in danger. But with people being 21, we can limit kids from getting to that, and it can reduce people ending up like me from going to prison. Tax money can be used to educate people and also give resources to the community. Why it's so important to me is because mostly expungement. I want to be able to expunge my record. This House Bill 600 could help a person like me get my life back in order. I want to be able to work in the cannabis industry and not have it be something that hindered me. Obviously, my family is working with Gas House, which is a big, huge cannabis company out of Oakland, California, and they have an equity program that I would love to see modeled here in Minnesota as well, where they help felons become a part of something that they were hurt from being in prison and actually be able to profit from it or make money from it in a long term in a safe environment, not be punished for it in a state like Minnesota. But I do want to thank you guys for letting me speak today, and I will ask that you guys please pass H.F. 600.
Very well. Thank you, Mr. Shivers, for your testimony, and thank you for your efforts to be a productive citizen, even as you're wrestling with the collateral damages, collateral consequences that face you as a result of your prior conviction. With that, members, we're going to move to public testifiers. I have one, two, three, I have five. And then after that, we'll open it up for discussion and questions from committee members. We'll begin with Jeff Potts, who is the Minnesota Chief Association Executive Director. Welcome to the committee, Chief Potts.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair and members, my name is Jeff Potts. I am the Executive Director of the Minnesota Chiefs Association, and I'm speaking today on behalf of the MCPA, who represents more than 300 police chiefs across the state and over 150 command staff members. We fully understand that other states have passed legislation to legalize recreational use of marijuana, and other states are considering proposals similar to what is before you here today. I further understand and respect the diverse opinions on this subject, but there are what we feel are very valid concerns why law enforcement is opposed to House File 600. I want to cover just two of those concerns with you today. Those two concerns are in the areas of increased addiction and traffic safety concerns. Regarding increased addiction, according to the Center for Disease Control, or the CDC, as you are all are very well aware and become very familiar with the CDC, who has provided us with the science and public health data to guide us through the COVID-19 pandemic, the CDC has also published significant amount of health science and public health data on the use of marijuana. Again, according to the CDC, marijuana is the most commonly used illicit drug in the United States, with approximately 22.2 million users each month. Research shows that 1 in 10 marijuana users will become addicted. For people who are beginning using before the age of 18, the number rises to 1 in 6. Marijuana use directly affects the brain, specifically the parts of the brain responsible for memory, learning, attention, decision-making, coordination, emotions, and reaction time. Developing brains, like those in babies, children, and teens, are especially susceptible to the adverse effects of marijuana. Eating foods or drinking beverages that contain marijuana have some different risks other than smoking marijuana, including a greater risk of poisoning. Long-term or frequent use of marijuana has been linked to increased risk of psychosis and schizophrenia. Mr. Chair and members, obviously this data is very concerning to us from a public safety perspective. Secondly, regarding marijuana's impacts on traffic safety, again, according to the CDC, driving while impaired by any substance, including marijuana, is dangerous. Marijuana, like alcohol, negatively affects a number of skills required for safe driving. Marijuana slows your reaction time and ability to make decisions. Marijuana use can impair coordination, distort perception, and lead to memory loss and difficulty with problem solving. The risks of impaired driving associated with marijuana in combination with alcohol appears to be greater than that of either by itself. As we further examined the data from the state of Colorado after legalizing recreational use of marijuana, they reported the following. When people are impaired by marijuana and get behind the wheel of a car, they take on a great deal of risk, not only for themselves, but also for everyone else on the road. As marijuana legalization has increased, the rate of marijuana-impaired traffic accidents has also increased. And to make matters worse, the rate of marijuana-related traffic deaths has gone up as well. The percentage of fatal car crashes in which at least one driver tested positive for THC has shot up in states that legalized marijuana. For example, between 2013 and 2016, the percentage of fatal car crashes in which at least one driver tested positive for THC increased nationwide by an average of 10%. But in Colorado and Washington, two states that legalized marijuana in 2014, the result was much different. During that same period, Colorado's marijuana-related traffic death rate shot up 92%, and Washington's increased by 28%. Still today, such deaths are still higher than the national average, but the statistics no longer seem to be spiking. However, the point of the concern here is that both states legalized marijuana and both states experienced a shocking increase in marijuana-influenced traffic deaths immediately afterwards. I'll conclude my remarks here today by saying that as of today, there is still no roadside test for law enforcement to accurately determine an impaired driver's level of intoxication from marijuana. We think such a test is vital to keeping the Minnesota roads and highways safe from marijuana-impaired drivers. Mr. Chair and members, for these reasons, the MCPA opposes House File 600, and I thank you for your time for allowing us to testify here today.
Thank you, Chief Potts, and hopefully you can hang around as well for any questions.
Sure thing, Mr. Chair.
Very well. Thank you. Next, we have Sheriff Kevin Torgerson from Olmsted County. Sheriff Torgerson, if you can state your name for the record and give us your testimony, we'd appreciate it.
Sure. Kevin Torgerson, T-O-R-G-E-R-S-O-N. Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee, for hearing me today on this very important issue. I am Olmsted County Sheriff Kevin Torgerson, representing the Minnesota Sheriff's Association. The Sheriff's Association opposes House File 600 to legalize marijuana. To pass this legislation will not make our community safer and will increase the ability for our youth to access this drug. Currently, our state is in a desperate battle to save lives in an opioid epidemic coupled with serious drug issues at the core of most crime across our state, from catalytic converter thefts to murders. Drug use, trafficking, addiction, and traffic and death drug-related deaths are increasing. Now is not the time to take this step. In my view, this bill, and since our association last testified before you, in my review of this bill, and since our association last testified before you on this topic, nothing in this bill has been done to solve the two issues most concerning to law enforcement, and now has created a new concern. The first being youth access. We can all agree our greatest resource in our state is our next generations. To pass this bill would severely impact our youth by making the access to this drug more readily available at a time when potency is at its highest in history. The proposed bill indicates a restricted access for juveniles, but common sense tells us the legalization will do two things: increase the availability to all ages and promote the ill-advised notion this drug is safe. Science has allowed for potency to develop over the years and has created more pathways to deliver this drug to our kids, marketed as candy and in vaping as a safer way to deliver the drug. To think our kids are not going to be impacted by these marketing implications is a terrible mistake. And lastly, the amount of money the state already spends on tobacco-related restrictions is staggering. It's easy to see the path forward is similar in preventing children to not become addicted to marijuana. The second issue law enforcement has raised before and not yet accomplished in this proposed bill is the safety on our roads, where law enforcement does not have a tool to provide a roadside test. Recently, the Department of Public Safety announced our state has seen 100 deaths already this year, the earliest and highest number of deaths currently in more than 6 years. Clearly, if there is no way to roadside test, we are only going to create more dangerous roads. We have had scientific testing for decades related to alcohol in an individual's system at the time of contact. There is yet no way for law enforcement to test and confidently know when a driver is under the influence of marijuana at the time of contact, other than by observation. Testing currently can only determine if the drug is in the system of an individual, but it cannot determine the level in one's system. We should all agree to ensure better testing before we move forward. And lastly, the expungement clause could severely impact our ability to prohibit persons from carrying and purchasing guns when doing background checks. We all should agree we want to keep guns out of the wrong hands. On behalf of the 87 elected sheriffs in Minnesota, please do not pass this bill forward today and do not legalize marijuana in the state of Minnesota. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, Sheriff, and hopefully you can also remain here in case there are some questions or comments.
I can, sir. Thank you.
Very well. Thank you very much. Next, we have Tony Parrish. Tony Parrish, if you can come forward, state your name for the record and give us your testimony, we'd appreciate it.
Good afternoon, Chairperson and committee members. My name is Tony Parrish, 67B. Appreciate this time to give testimony. I have many stories related to cannabis legalization, but I'll go with one of my most recent ones as it relates to equity. It was recently in the state of Oklahoma, this year that is, with an individual who's looking at cannabis opportunities in that state. We went and met with an African-American attorney who is involved with helping individuals file the necessary paperwork to get licensing and what have you within the state to be able to grow. And in the state of Oklahoma. Oklahoma, mind you, is only a medical state. However, because of its structure, an individual who owns property and has the money to apply for a license can obtain a license, grow for the state's medical program, as long as their harvest meets tests and standards, the state purchases a certain percentage and the grower keeps the rest. Right. So in learning all this information, I asked the lawyer, he says, you know, we have many Asians coming down here. We have white Americans. We have Native Americans. We even have Russians entering to the market. So I said, how many African Americans are involved? He puts up his hand and makes zero. I said, zero? None in the state at all? He said, zero. I was like, why is that? He was like, one is information and two, access. So my testimony here is twofold. One is to illustrate that the nation is moving forward. I'm going to emphasize the word forward on this, right? Because it's what's happening. Secondly, when we pass this legislation, we must make sure that there are enough checks and balances, not checks and balances, but opportunities for people of color to enter into this market, particularly African Americans. As illustrated and probably as just illustrated in this story, in a market that's pretty loose compared to other states, African Americans aren't even having an opportunity to participate in the industry. Part of that is access. Another part is that of members of that African-American community who are actually interested in this market. Those individuals happen to be those who are being shut out federally, and that must change, but as a state, we have to push for a sound, equitable solution so we aren't just creating another consumer base for this industry. And again, I thank you for the opportunity to testify before you all today.
Okay, well, thank you, Mr. Parrish. Appreciate you being with us. If you're able to stick around for questions or comments, so I invite you to do so.
I will.
Well. Very well. Next, we have Gunnar Oz, AAS, with Sensible Change, Minnesota. Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and give us your testimony.
Chair and committee members, thank you for the opportunity to speak with you today. My name is Gunnar Oss and I'm representing Sensible Minnesota. Founded in 2015, we have been advocating for drug policy reforms that prioritize public health, public safety, and restorative justice. and we're most well known for our medical cannabis and patient advocacy work. Representatives, a large inequity exists between who can access medical cannabis legally in Minnesota and who cannot. Between the high registration fees, annual recertification doctor appointments, and the cost of the product itself being nearly four times that of comparable products in other states, it's just one more example of how much money you have determines how likely you are to be arrested and interact with the criminal justice system. This issue goes hand in hand with the racial inequalities in our criminal justice system. Despite similar rates of use across demographics, white Minnesotans are disproportionately represented in registered medical cannabis patients. In addition to that, we know that Minnesotans of color are more likely to have health conditions that are well treated with cannabis. Cannabis use by unregistered patients, either as medicine or just simply as a health and wellness product, deserves the same protections and access to those in other states. I ask that you please do support House File 600 to help in creating a more equitable Minnesota.
Thank you for your testimony, Mr. Haas. And if you can, if you're able, if you can stick around for any questions or comments, I'd appreciate it as well. Finally, members, we have Marcus Harkus, Campaign for Full Legalization and Minnesota Cannabis College. Mr. Harkus, welcome to the committee.
Good afternoon. Thank you. My name is Marcus Harkus. I've studied the history of prohibition and the emerging legal cannabis industry for the past 7 years. I've been a cannabis consumer for 22 years because it makes me feel better. I've never been a criminal, but I grew up being treated like one by police. Pulled over for driving and walking while black 50 times, mostly in my teens and 20s. Excessive police harassment and police violence gave me PTSD, but cannabis helped me to drop the D, the disorder part. Cannabis is a healing plant, not a dangerous killer drug. The most dangerous thing about cannabis is getting caught with it because you can lose your freedom, lose your job, lose your housing, and even your children, as the earlier testifier noted. I've been a victim of prohibition myself, harassed, searched, disrespected, and assaulted by cops and discriminated against by employers. I'm just one of hundreds of thousands of adult cannabis consumers in Minnesota who are tired of living in a draconian police state. We simply want to live free. Prohibition is the problem, not cannabis. Prohibition adds zero value to public safety. It wastes law enforcement resources, and it ruins lives. Full legalization is a no-brainer because it's safer than senseless criminalization. A lot of the reefer madness rhetoric is embarrassing because it can be easily debunked. Let's just deal with the truth. Protect the public. Don't oppress us. Please pass House File 600. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Harkus. And you as well, if you're able to stick around, I'd appreciate it. That's all I have for our public testimony. We do have a couple of members who have raised their hands. Representative Winkler, there's a lot here. And so before we get to questions, I'm wondering if you want to be able to comment on any of that, particularly the more obvious public safety related issues, perhaps, the driving concerns, the testing issue. I know that I've, dove into that a couple of years ago. I think Representative Quap had a bill to set up a ability for us to run some kind of exploration of testing options. And then there's also the issue of expungement that was raised by a couple of members. So just offering you a few minutes or seconds to comment on those, Representative Wigland, and then we'll move to the committee members.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So first of all, I neglected to discuss expungement and vacating records in my opening comments. This bill does something that I don't think other cannabis legalization bills have done, which is that it creates a mechanism for automatic expungement and vacation. So essentially, if you have a petty misdemeanor or misdemeanor or gross misdemeanor level of offense, you will have, and it's just cannabis related, your record will be automatically expunged. The Department of Public Safety will provide a list of individuals to the court. A court will order it and will be expunged. If you have a felony level, we create an expungement board, which is a cannabis expungement board specifically, which examines those records and makes decisions on a case-by-case basis to determine whether or not there should be an expungement of those records. So the point here is that we have large numbers of people affected by this. We are not putting the burden on the individual to hire a lawyer or and go through a process affirmatively. We are reviewing records to determine whether past decisions related to charging and convicting or pleading were for a crime that we no longer consider to be a crime. On the issue of driving, I think it's important to first note that we have something called the National Highway Transportation or Traffic Safety Administration, which is the people in the federal government who examine the safety of our roadways nationwide. They have reviewed a large body of research and concluded that cannabis has a very slight impairment effect on an individual's driving. And a record of performance for drivers that is not different than a lot of other things like being tired. In fact, one study even showed that a woman is more impaired pregnant driving than a user of cannabis is. So there's a whole body of research on this that the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration has reviewed and concluded that impairment with cannabis is not particularly dangerous. The comparison to alcohol is not an apt comparison. We have many ways that people can be impaired behind the wheel. People can be taking prescription medication. They can be taking various kinds of legal substances. They can drink up to a certain amount legally. And for most of those types of impairment, we don't have an effective test. The only effective test, the only substance that has an effective test is alcohol. And that is a very unusual standard to meet because of the high correlation between alcohol, blood alcohol content, and level of impairment. That is an unusual substance. So while we need to continue to work towards cannabis testing, I think that would be a positive. It isn't necessary because we don't do that for anything else, for any other legal substance except alcohol. And finally, in the bill, we use some of the revenue generated from cannabis to provide drug recognition expert training for more law enforcement. So more law enforcement will be able to better understand what's happening on the highway as a result of the revenue raised in this bill. The last thing I would say is that, yes, there are health concerns related to cannabis. And the developing rate and some exacerbation of psychosis in certain conditions. But that isn't the same thing as saying that our current law enforcement policy is in any way effective at preventing it. In fact, it's a complete failure. We have a failed system, and creating a legal regulated marketplace is a much better approach to addressing the real concerns about cannabis, which do exist, and having the resources through taxation to pay to address those harms.
Very well, thank you, Representative Winkler. Let's dive into some of the other members here. We'll start with Representative Fraser.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you, Majority Leader Winkler, for bringing this bill. I know you cared before. Thank you for taking it through the committee process this year. I do wanna just touch one thing early on that Representative Johnson spoke to as to why we're hearing this bill. We're hearing this bill because this is the work of the House. We hear bills, we pass them out of committee, we move them on to the Senate to take action. We can't judge or govern our actions based on the inactions of the Senate. This bill directly addresses inequities and racism in our society and law enforcement. And I want to get to that too. I have some questions for our law enforcement individual to testify. But this bill addresses that. And because our Senate is not taking action on issues that are dealing with inequities and racism, doesn't mean the House shouldn't do that. So I've been very proud to be on this committee because we have been doing that all session long. And we will continue to do that until the session is over, all the way through conference committees. Hopefully we'll get something significant and meaningful passed out of that process. To my law enforcement testifiers, and any of you can speak to this. So there is a study from the ACLU that shows that African Americans are 5.4 times more likely to be stopped and or charged with possession or use of marijuana. We know that those usage rates are not the same in terms of the general population. So we have a status quo law right now in place that continues to produce inequities and is very much based on a racist policy that goes way back to President Nixon when he said that this war on drugs, particularly the war against marijuana use, would delegitimize and destabilize the Black community. So my question to you is, what is your response to how do we deal with this status quo of racism and indiscrimination if you want to, by not changing this law? How do you plan to deal with that? And either one of you can answer that question.
So that would be either Chief Potts or Sheriff Torgerson.
Mr. Chair, I can attempt to provide a response to Representative Frazier, if you'd like.
Please.
Thank you, Chief Potts.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, Representative Frazier, I think those are good questions, and I think we're willing to, you know, look at how are those inequities addressed. I guess I'm not, and I think the members in our association are so sure that the best way to do it is to legalize marijuana. I think we've had meetings with you and the chair and several other members to look at those inequities and try to figure out, A, why are they happening, and B, and more importantly, how can we address them? Again, my concern in the testimony I brought this forward is that we think that there are some true public safety issues associated with the legalization of recreational marijuana, particularly in the area of addiction and traffic safety that I pointed out, and I think the sheriff pointed out some others. We're very open to a discussion with you and the rest of the legislators to try to figure out how to deal with those inequities. Our position, I think, at this point is that we aren't convinced that legalizing marijuana is going to lead us to a better place. In fact, may create even more issues, public safety issues, public health issues. But we're very open to the conversation about how to address those inequities, whether it be through legislation or local policy.
Sir Frazier.
Yes. So a smart person once told me, we can't always admire the problem. And Chief Potts, what I just heard you say is you'd like to have more conversation. This is a decades-long issue that we're dealing with, that we're trying to address here. And the communities that are hurting, the communities that are incarcerated, the communities that have the collateral damage where they can't get jobs, they can't get access to student aid, they can't get access to housing because they have these criminal records based on marijuana. They're hurting now. They've been hurting for years. And what I hear you say is, let's continue to talk about this. I think that's unacceptable. I think we have to come up with solutions. I'm asking for solutions. I'm asking, what do you support right now? Is there anything you support right now that you think will turn the tides on this and start to bring down these inequities? And in any area of criminal justice reform or law enforcement reform, not just around marijuana, is there anything you support right now?
Chief Potts or Sheriff Torgerson?
Well, Mr. Chair, I guess if Representative Frazier's talking about the other reform issues that have been discussed, I think our association has brought some ideas forward for further discussion, particularly in the area of arbitration reform. As it relates to inequities and trying to really look at the data closely, I think our association has brought forward ways to better collect that data, perhaps through the Minnesota driver's license, where it's not currently not collected. But I think to Representative Frazier's, I'm not in a position to sit and admire the problem, quite to the contrary. But I think we're looking for solutions and outcomes that we think are really going to make a meaningful difference. And our concern on the marijuana bill, Mr. Chair and members, is that there perhaps is some unintended consequences from a public health standpoint and from a public safety standpoint that create concern. Again, we're more than willing to come to the table and have discussions. We saw a police reform bill passed in a matter of weeks that brought, I think, 8 or 9, or maybe it was more, reform measures forward in a very short period of time. And so, Mr. Chair and members, I think there's a way to do this in a fairly quick order and does not, I'm not advocating that we sit and admire the problem for a long period of time.
Representative Frazier, and then we'll move on to our...
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Chief Potts, for that. Thank you for what you just said. So I did receive your letter. In fact, I read from your letter on the House floor from the association, the Sheriff's Association, and the rank and file folks. Totally asked everyone to vote no against the police accountability reforms that we have and on this bill. So I can't sit here and sincerely take what you're saying, that you really want reform when you're a barrier to reform in every sense of the way that we moved it forward this year. But I appreciate your response. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Mr. Chair, if I may.
I'm sorry. Sheriff, please.
Right, thank you. Representative Frazier, I sat on the deadly force encounter working group with the Attorney General and Department of Public Safety Commissioner a couple of years ago, back in, well, it was 2019. And we presented our findings, recommendations, and action steps last year before the session began. And I realize we're getting a little bit away from the marijuana piece here as far as reform goes, but we were right at the table. I sat in those meetings. We had a lot of very good discussions, and I think we brought forward a very, very good document that was to be the pathway for reform here in the state of Minnesota. And we've been very open to having conversations and being involved. So I don't know that we would not continue in this vein as well. Other things that you asked as to what we would support, we and I have fully been willing to support continued look at how to support medical marijuana and its ability to help people who need the help and do it in a way that's safe and controlled and again, overseen by the state in a way that I think has been done fairly well, but I think it can be done further. So there's no way we can get to an understanding and a final solution to these issues unless we talk about it like Chief Potts has suggested. At times, it feels as though there's a lot of people telling law enforcement what to do at this point in time, and we're not at the table. So we need to be at the table, and if it takes a little bit of time, I realize that, but it is something that we need to be doing, and that's where we sit at this point. So I thank you for your thoughts and appreciate it. Thank you.
Mr. Chair, may I?
Representative Frazier.
Yes, that's what I just want to respond. Thank you, Sheriff Torgerson. I appreciate that. The meetings that you talked about in the use of force reforms, were those recommendations that were presented prior to the death of George Floyd?
Yes, they were.
So those didn't save George Floyd?
But no, they didn't.
No, they didn't. I'm not going to argue with you. That's just a fact that they didn't save George Floyd. And then in the current platform that you have now in terms of what you support, I don't see anything that speaks to this issue of enforcement of how you deal with marijuana possession or use. And that's kind of what we're getting at here. This is what this is about. I don't see anything in the platform around that. So that's why I asked the question, what do you support that would deal with this issue? I don't see anything in the current platforms from any of the associations on that particular issue.
Very well. Thank you, Representative Frazier. I will note that the omnibus bill that you referenced, in fact, did contain some of the recommendations from that working group, particularly around body cam, beginning that program, as well as investments in a couple of OJP programs to address some of the trauma that communities and individuals witness as a result of deadly force encounters in their community with law enforcement. That still did not generate the support, unfortunately, to your point. I do think it is important to have everyone at the table. And I want to make sure that we always work toward that end. Representative Raleigh.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And this first question, I've got a couple questions, but the first question goes to the bill's author, the majority leader, Representative Winkler, and I made a promise that I'd ask this question of you. So here it goes. On page 101.10, the label is food and food ingredients. Can you consider adding into this bill a label for gluten or gluten-free to any of the edibles that are in your bill, Mr. Chair?
Representative Winkler.
Mr. Chair, Representative Raleigh, that's a new one for me, but I'm open to it.
Representative Raleigh.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Winkler, again, I want to thank you for the time that you've got here today. The very first question that I asked in a committee, I asked you, and I was a bit admonished to go back and do my homework, and you had referenced JAMA, or the Journal of the American Medical Association. So I went back and I did a sustained set of research. I've gone through a little over 50 peer-reviewed journal articles on that, some of which are called Associations Between Cannabis Use and Physical Health Problems in Early Midlife. Another one was Prevalence of Marijuana and Other Substances Use Before and After Washington State's Change from Legal Medical Marijuana to Legal Medical and Non-Medical Marijuana, Assessing the Effects of Medical Marijuana Laws and Marijuana Use, and so forth. And I found that there's a theme throughout all of them. And this is something that in the Journal of the American Medical Association, they've got a term called CUD, or C-U-D, which is Cannabis Use Disorder. And it was a brand new term for me. And they framed it from the standpoint of something they call RML, or Recreational Marijuana Legalization. And the study the particular study that I looked at was the association between recreational marijuana legalization in the United States and changes in marijuana use and cannabis use disorder from 2008 to 2016. And specifically, this study included 505,796 respondents, and they reported a 25% increase in the same age groups after medical marijuana and then went to recreational marijuana. The question that they posed was, how does marijuana use and cannabis use disorder change between 2008 and 2016 after the legalization of marijuana? So it was very specific to what Minnesota is dealing with right now. And the conclusion as part of their journal entry was, although occasional marijuana use is not associated with substantial problems, long-term heavy use is linked to psychological and physical health concerns, lower educational attainment, decline in social class, unemployment, and motor vehicle crashes. And they further postulated that RML provided a base to, in their words, and I quote, reducing ethical and ethnic inequalities in marijuana-related arrests and convictions has been the key aim of legalization, end quote. So my question to you as the author: is the potential for a decline in social class, unemployment, and lower educational attainment worth the potential, changes in the racial and ethical inequalities that have been spoken about, Mr. Chair?
Representative Winkler.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Raleigh. I'm not going to say that there aren't trade-offs in any public policy that we enact. There are always trade-offs. I think, and certainly trying to address the disparate treatment by race in our criminal justice system is a key reason for supporting this bill. But we also have substantial components of the bill related to public health and educating youth according to actual scientific standards and taking a public health approach, much like we do with cigarettes. Cigarettes have adverse consequences, severe ones. They are physically addictive in a way that cannabis is not physically addictive. There is substance use disorder associated with cannabis, but it's not the same thing as a physical addiction. And our approach to cigarettes is to educate people, to create restrictions on where it can be used, and to make sure that essentially, we are using our tax system to make it less favorable to purchase them. So there are a multitude of approaches that we take on cigarettes, in a legal regulated environment. And that is what I am advocating for on behalf of cannabis. I would note that I do have, I could go through, a, and I went, we discussed this in the K-12 committee. There is an almost, it's overwhelming number of research studies showing that there is no increase in youth use of cannabis as a result of legalization. And so there may be more heavy long-term use. That could also be a social change that's tied up at the same time that cannabis is becoming more commonplace. I don't know. But the point is, good public health and good education in a legal, regulated marketplace is a better way to handle the adverse effects than using the criminal justice system.
Very well. Members, just let me pause really quickly. It's the chair's intent to have, take a vote at 3 p.m., which is about 15 minutes from now on this, because we still have the other bill I want to get through. And so I will move quickly through the members. If you still have questions that you're not able to get to before 3 p.m., I'll circle back to you. Representative O'Neill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have several concerns. So just recently, this legislature enacted T21. So trying to keep cigarettes and vaping products out of the hands of teenagers and 20-year-olds, I guess. And one thing legalizing marijuana would concern me is that now, and I don't know if there's restriction in this bill as to how far reaching we're going to be trying to legalize marijuana, if that includes the vaping oil that includes 97% THC, which is incredibly dangerous, especially to a young brain. So my concern is, on one hand, the legislature just enacted T21 trying to keep vaping and tobacco products and nicotine products out of the hands of teenagers and 20-year-olds. And on this hand, we would be legalizing marijuana, I'm guessing in all forms, and maybe the author can correct me if I'm wrong, but that would include vaping oil with 97% THC. It seems a little bit, it makes my head spin, to be honest. But my question actually is to Chief Potts. So one testifier had talked about, if we legalize it, then we can regulate it and it's safer. And I'm wondering, Chief Potts, how would law enforcement enforce that? Because is it distinguishable? Can you tell an illegal product and an unregulated product and a dangerous product and a product that is not what it says it is versus something that is legal, is regulated, and is relatively safe? I'm wondering if Chief Potts has any idea how law enforcement might be able to distinguish.
Chief Potts.
Mr. Chair, Representative O'Neill, I think that's one area that is a challenge for law enforcement in their conversations with other states to try to figure out how they do that. It's unclear. I think it is difficult to tell. It's in its packaging or original packaging from a lawful distributor. It's a little easier. However, you still don't really know what is, you know, in the substance beyond what packaging might say. And so that is a challenge. The one thing that we have heard from other states in terms of, in states where it has been legalized, is that there is still a very strong black market. And in more recent years, we've seen potency be a very large concern for law enforcement. I mentioned this in the testimony. It's even more difficult when it comes to the edibles in terms of the potency. I referenced the CDC data earlier. The other states that have legalized it, while most of the edibles may be from the regulated market, there are higher levels of THC, at least higher amounts of ingested edibles that have led to higher amounts of THC, which is a very big concern. I think the CDC points out that that's where they're seeing those cases resulting in poisonings. And so to your question, the short answer is it's a challenge. Law enforcement doesn't always know if what's in the packaging is what was originally in it, and law enforcement has no way of testing in a roadside capacity to determine the potency of the cannabis. So nor do we have the ability to test on the roadside someone's level of impairment who may have just used cannabis or marijuana.
Representative Winkler.
Mr. Chair, Representative O'Neill, to your question about products that are for sale, we don't just create a blanket legalization for anything related to cannabis. We create a cannabis management board that has the authority to approve the sale of cannabis products. And we have restrictions in the bill on what kinds of products can be approved and what kinds of products can't be approved, including limits on doses per, basically the amount of THC per unit sold. So I think the scenario that you threw out, it would be not a product that would be sold. Chief Potts raised the question of the illicit marketplace continuing. I would say that there are bad examples and good examples of how to eliminate the illicit marketplace. If Colorado, for example, had each county make its own decision, which essentially meant that there was a thriving illegal marketplace in Colorado because cannabis sales and consumption were still going to continue in counties that didn't have it legalized. California did a particularly poor job of this by creating a very expansive medical program that basically allowed you to grow your own with few restrictions, and then they tried to create a legal marketplace on top of that with very high taxation and very restrictive regulations. So they essentially guaranteed that there would be a continued illegal marketplace. One of our main approaches to eliminating the illicit marketplace, and I hope your conservative heart will like me saying this, if we have taxes too high and regulations too burdensome, there are disincentives for people to transition into the legal business. So we try to have regulations that are, simple and that taxation isn't too high so that we can migrate into a legal marketplace because we don't want the illicit or illegal or black market to continue.
Representative O'Neill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, there's just so much here. I'm trying to focus my comments because I know we want to get to a vote. Mr. Chair, I have vast concerns beyond what was even spoken here. And the chair talked about that some things are still going to remain illegal, which to me just makes it more confusing for folks like the very first testifier we had who said he spent 36 months in prison. And I kind of looked I've been around here a while, Mr. Chair, and I looked up what that meant, and I'm guessing it was a second degree or maybe third degree dealing, which I think is about 22 pounds of marijuana with a child present and guns present, I think he said. So I guess I'm going to ask the chair really quickly, and then I'll be done. How much possession? So can someone possess 100 pounds of marijuana? Is there no upper limit on how many pounds? Or, like, what are you envisioning as the limits before it becomes illegal?
Mr. Chair, Representative O'Neill, so first of all, we allow individuals to have some home grow. So you can have up to 8 total plants, 4 of which can be producing cannabis, and you can keep 10 pounds in your own home. You can't transport it, you can't have it in any other location, you have to keep it in your home. If you are purchasing cannabis and moving it around as a consumer, you can have 2 ounces, which is a little bit more than kind of our lower limit of 1.5 ounces under current law where it's a petty misdemeanor. So the point here is that we are still maintaining limits and we are creating it's the same thing. Cigarettes are a legal product. You can sell them. You cannot create an illegal marketplace for off-market cigarettes. That's against the law, and you will be and there's, consequences for that. We're doing the same thing with cannabis, essentially, and it's a 2-ounce limit on how much you can move around, and then otherwise you have to keep it in your own home.
Very well. Members, we have 6 minutes left before we vote. We still have a few other members. If there's still time, I'll come back, but I kind of doubt we're going to have time to come back to members who've already asked questions. Representative Pinto.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I was going to ask a question of law enforcement testifiers, but I think I'll maybe just turn it into a comment to make sure that we've got as much time as possible. And I want to circle back to the inequities that were referred to earlier and kind of come at them from another angle, because we had a lot of discussion about the racial inequities here, disparities, which I think are so huge. But I guess in my mind, I'm thinking, again, the testimony from Chief Potts especially made me think about this, is the inequities in terms of the substances involved. I'm somebody who's had some real hesitation about this because of the concerns about brain development for youth. But I have to say that when I think about the comparison with tobacco and alcohol, Chief Potts had referenced how addictive he believes that cannabis is, but Leader Winkler pointed out that tobacco is so much more addictive. I mean, obviously has huge health consequences, in that case, longer term. I know my work as a prosecutor, the huge impact of alcohol so much. And so I guess I'm just not understanding. And I want to make sure that it's clear that I am not suggesting prohibition of alcohol or tobacco. We tried that. And that did not work. And Mr. Harkis made the reference to prohibition of this substance. I guess I do not understand why, if we recognize the prohibition of those other substances is a bad idea, that we would think the continued prohibition of this one is a good idea. Instead, as Leader Winkler said, we have taken a public health approach with those other substances. That is not perfect and presumably won't be perfect with this either. But that is a much better approach. And my understanding of this bill is that this is the best approach in the country, learning from states all around the country. And I'm grateful for that approach. So I guess I would just challenge law enforcement leaders and all of us when we're thinking about this, think about these other substances that have a bigger social impact and yet we treat them this way. And then we have this substance that has these huge racial disparities. And I just cannot understand why we would continue that. And then one final comment, Mr. Chair, there was comment made along the way also by law enforcement, concerns about not being at the table when reforms are being discussed. And I'll just say that in my experience and view, it really has been the case along the way that law enforcement has been. That's appropriate. I certainly respect these leaders. But I'll note that what's new now and really needs to be the case is that we have community members at the table as well, continuing discussions. And that is absolutely critical. And I know that that will continue under your leadership, Mr. Chair. So I'm an enthusiastic yes vote for the bill. And thank you, Mr. Chair, for providing a hearing. And Leader Winkler, for your work. Thanks so much.
Thank you, Chair Pinto. And I didn't want to comment earlier because I didn't want to distract from before us. But I do reject the contention that law enforcement has not been at the table that I occupy in order to have shape public policy. I've taken actually great pains to consistently reach out of respect and an understanding of the deep knowledge that they possess in their profession to be able to respond and help shape our proposals. But back to this issue, I think one of the advantages perhaps that we have as a state compared to all the others that rushed into a legalization program is that we can look and study and learn from all the mistakes of others. Representative Winkler shared examples of things that didn't work well in two states, Colorado and California, that created some pretty big problems. We still have a couple of minutes left. We still have two members left, Representative Grasso and then Representative Johnson. I'll do that in that order. And then I will move to a vote, members, at 3 p.m. Representative Grasso.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, members. And Representative Winkler, thanks for bringing this forward, so we can have a good, open, and honest discussion about it. Chief Potts, or our esteemed sheriff there, Torgerson, with the higher levels of THC that you're seeing today, that would more than likely bring increased addictions. Can you tell me, how that might increase or affect keeping a job, keeping your families together, and what other kind of detriments might these increased levels of addiction bring?
Chief Potts.
Mr. Chair, Representative Gross, I think it's that information I quoted from the CDC. Indicates at least to me that one in 10 users of marijuana become addicted, and one in six if they start using it under the age of 18, obviously creates challenges for that individual who's suffering from the addiction. As you know, in law enforcement, we end up responding to the situations when folks are in crisis and have to try to figure out how we're going to help them get out of crisis. I can't really speak to all of the challenges that someone experiences who has an addiction, but I can tell you that from a law enforcement perspective, we see that far too frequently, unfortunately, and end up responding to that individual when they're in some form of crisis as a result of the addiction. I'll defer to the sheriff for a response, for an additional response to that, but I think it's fairly clear that that addiction is certainly causes them challenges. Unfortunately, law enforcement gets involved when they're in the crisis form of that addiction.
Yes, Mr. Chair, I do appreciate the question, Representative Grosso, and this bill, if it the motion is to send this to Health, Finance, and Policy. It's a good question. I think it's a question that absolutely should be posed.
Mr. Chair,
I am intrigued by this, issue of collateral consequences on one end versus collateral consequences on the other. I do want to get your colleague, Representative Johnson, in as a final questioner, and then I'm going to move to a vote here, Representative.
Just a quick follow-up on that, if I may, please.
Representative Grass, I don't have the time for a follow-up.
Mr. Chair, these are questions. These are questions that need to be asked, sir.
Representative Johnson, they'll be asked in the next committee. Representative Johnson.
Chair Mariani, members, I got a lot of concerns about this bill. First of all, I'm just wondering why the author or representative, or I should say Majority Leader Winkler, removed the authority of the, it would be the Cannabis Management Board, to employ peace officers.
Let's move to Representative Winkler to answer that question. I do want to move to involve Representative Winkler. Try to facilitate your questions, Representative Johnson. Representative Winkler.
Mr. Chair, Representative Johnson, we removed it because I believe that we don't need a growth in the number of separate law enforcement agencies around the state. We have the BCA, we have the State Patrol, we have local sheriffs, local police. And the Cannabis Management Board itself does not need to employ peace officers. We have enough agencies in my mind.
Representative Johnson.
Okay. That does make a little bit of sense to me, but I still have concerns. I'm also disappointed because a friend of mine was called in to testify today on this issue because he has some strong feelings about it because of what marijuana did to his life, destroyed it. Because of that high that he got from the THC, he wanted a stronger and stronger high and got him into harder drugs. I destroyed his life, his family. He had some strong statements. I'll be contacting him when this committee gets done to find out what happened because he had all intentions of testifying. In fact, I was with him when he sent the email to testify.
So I'll try to figure out what happened. Johnson, if you could ask a question, I want to move to a vote.
I have some concerns on this. The only real deep involved study that I'm aware of dealing with marijuana was the Colorado study, and that dealt with just medical marijuana. They saw a huge increase of youths getting involved in using marijuana. The number of traffic-related accidents and deaths skyrocketed. It just got a lot of concerns. Then I also have concerns with the availability of being able to hold 10 pounds in your possession. For those of you who don't know it, on the average price right now, that's $30,000 worth of marijuana. This needs a lot more study. This needs a lot more study, not only in this committee, but many committees. This bill, I don't believe, is ready for prime time, and I'm going to ask... request my members to vote no on this because there's a lot more work that needs to be done. And we have not been given ample time to really discuss this bill. Our members have been shut off on their questions. I know other members had questions. So at this point, I'm going to ask my members to vote no.
Representative Representative Winkler, you get the final word here before we go to a vote.
Mr. Chair, members, I appreciate the time. I'm happy to answer any questions or talk with any of you offline or in future committees. There's plenty of stops ahead of us on this bill, and I ask for your support today. Thank you for the time.
Very well. The chair renews his motion that House File 600, as amended, is referred to the Committee on Health and Health Finance and Policy. The clerk will take the roll.
Chair Mariani.
Aye.
Chair Mariani, aye. Vice Chair Frazier.
Aye.
Vice Chair Frazier, aye. Representative Johnson.
No.
Representative Johnson, nay. Representative Edelson.
Aye.
Representative Edelson, aye. Representative Feist.
Aye.
Representative Feist, aye. Representative Grossel.
No.
Representative Grossel, nay. Representative Hollins.
Aye.
Representative Hollins, aye. Representative Hewitt.
Yes.
Representative Hewitt, aye. Representative Cleavorn.
Aye.
Representative Cleavorn, aye. Representative Long.
Aye.
Representative Long, aye. Representative Lucero.
No.
Representative Lucero, nay. Representative Mueller, excused. Representative Novotny.
Novotny, no.
Representative Novotny, nay. Representative O'Neill.
Novotny, no.
O'Neill, no.
Representative O'Neill, nay. Representative Pinto.
Pinto, aye.
Representative Pinto, aye. Representative Poston.
No.
Representative Poston, nay. Representative Raleigh.
Raleigh, nay.
Representative Raleigh, nay. Representative Vang.
No. Oh, aye. Excuse me.
Representative Vang, aye. Representative Zhang.
Aye.
Representative Zhang, aye. That concludes roll call with 11 ayes and 7 nays.
Very well. With 11 ayes and 7 nays, the motion prevails. And House File 600, as amended, is referred to the Committee on Health and Finance Policy. Thank you, Representative Winkler. Best wishes with your bill. Representative Long, House File 2539. Representative Long moves to refer House File 2539 to the General Register. Representative Long, you have an author's amendment. Do you wish to move that at this point?
Yes, please, Mr. Chair.
Very well. Representative Long moves adoption of the DE2 amendment. That puts the bill in the shape that the author wishes it to be before us today. All in favor of that motion, please say aye.
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 Opposed, same sign?
No.
Motion prevails, and House File 2539 is amended with the DE2 amendment. Representative Long, your bill, as you wish it to be before us, is indeed before us.
Thank you so much, Mr. Chair. I'll try to be brief because I know we're running late today, but thank you very much for hearing this bill today. Last week, we had an important step for justice for George Floyd. We know that the tragic shooting of Dante Wright must call us to action as well. Dante Wright's tragic death highlighted several shortcomings of our criminal justice system, and I commend Representative Frazier and Representative Mueller for their work on stops for equipment violations. Representative Vang and I are partnering on this provision that we're hearing today to address what happened after the decision to stop Mr. Wright. Once the officers determined to pull Mr. Wright over for his expired tabs and air freshener, they found he had an outstanding warrant for failure to appear in a first appearance for a summons. But Mr. Wright likely never knew about this warrant because the summons had been sent to an address from which mail had already been returned. These situations with incorrect addresses are unfortunately common, and some jurisdictions have taken a common sense approach where instead of issuing a bail warrant for failures to appear in a first appearance, they use a sign and release warrant instead. So in these instances, an officer notifies the individual that they have an upcoming trial date and asks them to sign to recognize that they have understood the trial date is coming up. This takes down the temperature in the interaction with police, as there's no need to take them into custody. It's important to note that the prosecutor in these circumstances has already determined that bail was not needed, which is why they have proceeded with a summons. This process has led in the jurisdictions that are using it to good rates of appearance for the trial dates, up to 2/3 in one jurisdiction that was tracking it. And this shows that individuals largely do want to come to their court date when they know about them. The concept in this bill is supported by Ramsey County Attorney John Choi and Hennepin County Attorney Mike Freeman. And it's my understanding that where these procedures are in place, they have found that they work very well and are well supported. this would be at least one step we can take to try to reduce tension whenever possible when we know it was likely prompted by a simple mistake. We received a $0 fiscal note for the bill yesterday, noting that the procedural changes can be absorbed within current budgets. And I also want to thank Representative Novotny for his counsel and his engagement on this bill ahead of today's hearing. And with that, I'd like to ask Representative Vang to say a few opening remarks before we hear from our speakers.
Very well, Representative Vang.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. Today's a new day, but the same problem remains. Once again, we come before the committee because another young, unarmed Black man was killed, Dante Wright. Today, I want to honor Dante Wright's memory by presenting this bill, House File 2539. Although this bill may not solve all these specific issues relating to police brutality, this bill could have prevented Dante Wright's death. For whatever reason, Dante Wright unknowingly and unexpectedly got a warrant for his arrest. This bill works to reasonably minimize the number of arrests and interactions police have with individuals who have warrants for failing to appear in court for certain misdemeanor offenses. This bill is common sense. It minimizes unnecessary work for police officers to expend time and resources on citizens who aren't a public safety threat, and for communities who fear police officers can relax and continue to regain their trust from them. And lastly, I'm thankful to my colleague, Representative Jamie Long, for putting all the hard work on this bill. His background, knowledge, and expertise is tremendous in shaping this bill, and I'm grateful to have him champion this. Members, I ask for your support. Dante Wright should still be with us, and this bill could have saved him that day. Let's honor his memory to make sure another unarmed Black man can still live a life full of potential and love from his family and friends. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Vang. And I want to just publicly acknowledge your large public service in the last few weeks. This incident occurred in your district, and you've been very much present with your community and trying to keep peace and help meet the needs of your neighbors and your constituents. Thank you for that. With next members, we have the mayor of Brooklyn Center, Mayor Elliott. Welcome to the committee, sir. Please state your name for the record and give us your testimony.
All right. Thank you very much for having me, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. My name is Mike Elliott, and I represent the City of Brooklyn Center, serve as the mayor. I come before you as mayor of a city that is grieving the killing of one of my residents and community members, Dante Wright, 20-year-old young Black man who was shot by a Brooklyn Center police officer. That tragic killing has sent a tidal wave, a call for justice across the state, our state, across our nation, in the world. Just last week, we buried Dante Wright, and we also received a verdict in the Derek Chauvin trial. We all recognize that verdict didn't represent justice, true justice. It represented progress, but not the kind of justice that is deeply needed in this state and across our nation. After all, justice is George Floyd's daughter having her father to take care of her, and Dante Wright's son having his father to take care of him. We all need to work together to achieve meaningful reforms such that members of our community, when they interact with police, don't end up dead. With this bill, an officer pulling over someone like Dante for expired tabs or air fresheners and subsequently finding that they have an outstanding warrant would have to notify somebody like Dante of their upcoming trial date and ask him to sign and thereby reduce the potential for conflict and help avoid tragedies like the one that happened here in Brooklyn Center. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Mayor Elliott, and my acknowledgement as well for the trauma and pain that your community has endured over the last couple of weeks. I appreciate your leadership and working to help keep the peace and to keep people engaged positively with one another. Next, we have Julia Decker again from ACLU. Ms. Decker, welcome back.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Again, Julia Decker, Policy Director for the ACLU of Minnesota. First, just want to say we really appreciate the work by Representatives Long and Representative Zhang and also Representative Novotny's input on this proposal. ACLU of Minnesota supports the principal aim of HF 2539, which is to reduce unnecessary contact by law enforcement with members of the community. People may fail to appear for a scheduled court date for a variety of reasons, many of which disproportionately impact low-income communities and communities of color. Things like access to transportation or transit, childcare, time off from a job, or a stable address are all reasons why a person may not be able to appear for a court date and indeed may not even be aware that they have a court date. Now, we would urge the committee to remember that the severity of a charge does not change any of these access issues, and further, that a charge is not a conviction. In that vein, we urge the committee to examine if a custodial arrest for a pending charge should ever be the default response by armed law enforcement. And as we've discussed with Representative Long, we would also urge consideration of whether broad catch-all exceptions, such as the exception in Subdivision 6 of this proposal, provide loopholes for continued disparities in policing and public safety. Changing Minnesota law to minimize custodial arrests for failure to appear on misdemeanor, gross misdemeanor charges takes a good principled step towards addressing one of many issues within Minnesota's public safety system that disproportionately harms low-income and BIPOC communities. We are committed to working with this committee and the legislature to build on this and other proposals in order to enact change that is transformative, not only in name, but also in substance. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Decker. And I suspect that Representative Long was listening very carefully. I suspect he'll circle back to you, particularly on that Section 6 language. Mr. Justin Terrell from Minnesota Justice Research Center, always good to have you here, sir. Welcome.
Thank you, Chair Mariani. As always, it's a pleasure to come before this body. I think you guys are doing amazing work and being responsive to the needs of the state of Minnesota, from the members on this body down to the staff. My name is Justin Terrell, and I'm the executive director of the Minnesota Justice Research Center. The nature of our punitive criminal legal system is one that turns service calls such as traffic stops into criminal investigations. This practice needs to be reexamined. The life of Dante Wright was cut short after a traffic stop that has been reported to take place due to an air freshener and an expired tabs. The stop became a criminal investigation when the officers discovered Dante had a warrant and they proceeded to take him into custody. Think about that for a minute. An air freshener and expired tabs could lead to jail time. These are administrative oversights at minimum. But in Dante's case, we know that it led to the taking of his life and the civil unrest that followed. House File 2539 is a policy that could have saved Dante's life. Instead of arresting Dante, he could have been ticketed and released, gone home to his family and dealt with his warrant at the appropriate time. Especially the provision in the bill that talks about that you would qualify for sign and release if you had appeared for a hearing in the past, which is my understanding that Dante did. Every interaction with the public can be seen as a criminal investigation by officers. There needs to be room to show up and provide service, and not as a predator looking for any excuse to take someone to jail, especially in situations where the person has shown good faith efforts to resolve the condition. I'll just close with a quick personal story. Saturday night, this past Saturday, an elderly black man knocked on my door at 11:30 p.m. I woke up and ran to the front door while my wife checked on the kids. This man needed a ride to HCMC and asked that I call him an ambulance.
When Brandon Scott arrived, was Baltimore, youngest in more than a century, and he campaigned on the promise to realize...
Mayor Elliott, I think we'll need you to mute yourself and we're picking up some conversation. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. Saturday night, an elderly black man knocked on my door at 11:30 p.m. I woke up and ran to the front door with my wife, while my wife checked on the kids. This man needed a ride to HCMC and asked that I call him an ambulance. When the police arrived, my wife started recording as we greeted them respectfully. A few minutes into the interaction, the officers checked for warrants and communicated to our elder that he had some issues to resolve. All of a sudden, this call transformed into a criminal investigation versus providing a service to get this man to safety. And I just think that this practice needs to be reexamined. We know how it can go wrong. We know that this bill would provide officers with another opportunity to make sure that those interactions go right. The Minnesota Justice Research Center is looking into this issue and will provide a summary of our research to this body. I imagine the data will affirm this bill is a good policy, and I ask this body to support this bill. Doing so will signal to the community that law enforcement is taking a proactive response to the crisis caused by Officer Potter, who discharged her firearm and erased Dante Wright's life from our community. I wanted to say thank you to Representative Long for inviting me to testify today. I want to say thank you to Representative Vang and to all the members who I've seen out in the community in Brooklyn Center doing their best to respond to the calls for justice. And I'll conclude my remarks there. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Terrell. Appreciate the work of the Justice Research Center. I look forward to your brief that you referenced in your testimony. So that concludes the testifiers. I've got a few minutes left. I've got three individuals. I'm going to call on them, and then we're going to move to a vote. Representative Poston.
Thank you, Chair Mariani, and I'll be really quick. I've got a quick, fast question for Representative Long. Representative Long, I'm looking for a fiscal note, and I'm wondering if one is available or if you have one coming on this bill, because it seems like there could be some significant financial impacts.
Representative Long. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you for the question, Representative Poston. I spoke pretty fast in my introduction, but I did mention that we received the fiscal note yesterday, and it was from the courts, and it was $0. So they believe that they can meet the needs of the bill using the existing reporting structures and functions that they have.
And Representative Long, we could certainly ask our staff to post that note for the public as well. Thank you for your question, Representative Poston. Representative Abbey.
Thank you, Chair Mariani. I'd like to point out and just make a statement that a warrant is an order issued by the court. A gross misdemeanor warrant issued by the court is a shall arrest. This is not a discretionary issue from the police. They come across someone and the warrant, once discovered, is a shall arrest. If the courts and the legislature wants to change a procedure, which is what I propose we do in this situation, then that will change the direction and the orders that are given to police to carry out on behalf of the court system and the legislature in the state of Minnesota as a whole. On any given day, warrants are issued for what's called nightcaps. Non-ICAP warrants can't be served on nights and weekends or holidays. It doesn't matter to the officer anywhere in the state of Minnesota if they can't make an arrest on a warrant or if arrest is satisfied. As I said on the floor last week, a warrant that isn't issued is a trip that they don't have to make to jail. It's not a report they don't have to do, and it leaves them available to respond to emergency situations. I'm voting yes on this because it's a public safety issue, and it seems like the right thing to do, despite all of the white noise or background noise in the background. It's the right thing to do because it's the right thing to do. I urge my members to vote yes. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Representative Abbey. Representative O'Neill.
Chair, I just have a procedural question for the author, Representative Long. I looked and it looked like it was introduced on the 17th of this month, 10 days ago. Now we're having a hearing, and I'm wondering if your plan is to get a rules waiver so that it can move forward appropriately.
Representative Long.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Representative O'Neill. That's a good question. I was thinking just the same thing. So I don't know if staff can assist if we need to be referred to rules or if going to the floor is I suppose if we go to general register that can be taken up for rules.
I believe that's correct, Representative Wong.
And I had introduced this as an amendment to the bill last week, but I withdrew it because there was a concern over germaneness, and we wanted to be fair to both sides on germaneness. So I'm going through the regular order instead.
Absolutely. Thank you for the question, Representative O'Neill. Representative Frazier, then Representative Johnson, then we're going to go to a vote.
Yeah, just quickly. I agree with Representative Novotny. This makes sense. It is taking situations where our officers don't have to engage in situations that they necessarily don't need to engage in. So I'm going to vote yes on this. I'm glad Representative Novotny said what he said because I absolutely agree with that. So let's move forward and see if we can make some changes and save some lives.
Thank you, Representative Frazier. I believe Representative Novotny correctly characterized the landscape, if you will, the reality. And so, so therefore, the bill that we have before us relative to what a court that can exercise. So, Johnson, then we're going to move to a vote.
Chair Mariani, Representative Long. I know I've talked to my sheriffs about this. They actually brought it up to me because I hadn't seen your bill that had been entered, but they had, and they had some concerns on it as well. One concern was it really won't change that much, especially your first bill, because they'd have to be brought into the jail to get booked and get released. And I see you change that a little bit. I do have still have some concerns. Unfortunately, even if this would have been in effect, that tragic incident in that occurred in, excuse me, Brooklyn Center wouldn't have changed because that was a felony warrant for a weapons violation and fleeing police officer, not a gross misdemeanor or a misdemeanor warrant. I believe it was a felony warrant. It's unfortunate that he didn't comply and just go to jail, and things would have been a lot different, but it's easy to be a Monday morning quarterback. I also would like to, if you could actually forward the official fiscal note, it would be appreciated. I also think because this deals with judicial issues, this bill also needs to go to judiciary, not the general register, because this is actually changing the Minnesota court rules and procedures, dealing in rules 3.01 and 3.03, I believe. That are mentioned in the amendment. I guess I am mistaken. I just learned that it was a gross misdemeanor warrant, which, as Representative Novotny says, is a shall arrest. I would also like to explain how warrants are issued. I don't think everybody on this committee understands that. When you get a citation or you end up going to court for an issue, you're arrested, go for your bail hearing. The judge sets the bail, but the defense attorney requests a certain bail. Usually they request RPR, and the prosecutor looks at everything and decides what the bail would be best under that situation. And then the judge decides. I've seen it where the judge has actually set bail higher than what the prosecutor requested. And I've also seen it where they've set it much lower or RPR, even though the prosecutor requested bail. This is a whole different change. And it's something I think that needs to be discussed in the Judiciary Committee when we have the prosecutors and the judges and everybody available to discuss this. So with that, with it going to the general register, I'm going to have my members vote no, because I do believe it needs to go to judiciary to work some other issues out. Thank you.
Members, just for the record, the chair of judiciary has waived this, seeing this bill. There is no cost to the courts. In longstanding practice between our two committees, she exercised the ability not to see this. I just do have to very quickly, comment, complying, quite frankly, is a very disturbing notion for a free people. And I do believe that all citizens should cooperate, listen, work well with all members of our public safety. But this obsession, quite frankly, of compliance and the culture of compliance, I just can't think of anything more antithetical to our freedoms and to a free people. It leads to all sorts of violations of our constitutional rights, the bedrock of who we are as a people. And unfortunately, when it comes to race and interracial interaction, it leads to the ultimate violation of human rights, which is the taking of life. I certainly hope that there is no one in this body who thinks that what happened to Mr. Wright was the right thing for our laws, our state, our public safety to produce. We need to move away from any kind of normalization of that behavior. And we're only going to do that if we are real clear about these values and if we work with one another across our political communities to reassert the human rights of all people, of all citizens, and to focus our laws on our constitutional rights. Representative Long, I probably said your last words, but last comments, and then we're going to take a vote.
No, thank you, Mr. Chair. I just appreciate members' engagement on this, and I know that this is a proposal that is coming before us quickly. So, Representative Johnson or others, I'd be very happy to work with you on further conversation as we're going forward, and appreciate everybody's dialogue on this. I also just want to thank Representative Vang for her partnership on this and for her real leadership, as you put it well, Mr. Chair, in her community in these past two very, very difficult weeks.
Thank you, Representative Long. I do appreciate the bipartisan manner in which you approach this bill as well. With that, Representative Long renews his motion that House File 2539 as amended be referred to the General Register. The clerk will take the roll.
Chair Mariani.
Aye.
Chair Mariani, aye. Vice Chair Frazier.
Aye.
Vice Chair Frazier, aye. Representative Johnson.
No.
Representative Johnson, nay. Representative Edelson.
Aye.
Representative Edelson, aye. Representative Feist.
Aye.
Representative Feist, aye. Representative Grossel.
No.
Representative Grossel, nay. Representative Hollins.
Aye.
Representative Hollins, aye. Representative Hewitt.
Aye.
Representative Hewitt, aye. Representative Cleavorn.
Aye.
Representative Cleavorn, aye. Representative Long.
Aye.
Representative Long, aye. Representative Lucero.
No.
Representative Lucero, nay. Representative Mueller, excused. Representative Novotny.
Aye.
Representative Novotny, aye. Representative O'Neill.
O'Neill, aye.
Representative O'Neill, aye. Representative Pinto.
Aye.
Representative Pinto, aye. Representative Poston.
No.
Representative Poston, nay. Representative Raleigh.
Raleigh, aye.
Representative Raleigh, aye. Representative Vang.
Aye.
Representative Vang, aye. Representative Zhang.
Aye.
Representative Zhang, aye. That concludes roll call with 14 ayes and 4 nays.
Very well. In a vote of 14 ayes and 4 nays, the motion prevails and House File 2539 as amended is referred to the General Register. Thank you, Representative Long, for your work on this, Representative Novotny, and thank you all committee members for the engagement on this. Let's keep doing that so we can continue to shape good law here. Members, at this point, I don't have any committee hearings scheduled. I will alert you, though, but that's always a possibility. There are still a number of issues and a number of members have asked for informational hearings, and given the ability or based on the ability of our schedule, I will try to honor those as best as I can. So until such time, this committee stands adjourned.